You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Now, to some of your comments, I work 9 to 5, Greg, so to avoid all the traffic stress, I'm sure to be in town for 8 a.m. I don't leave until 7 p.m. Right, okay, so you're effectively an extra 3 hours in town every day? Okay, wow. Greg, the problem I see at the Polestar is that the lights change immediately red as you're going around. No warning amber light to alert you they're about to change. I had to stop yesterday at a red light and the person behind me blew me out of it. And although the Polestar lights were off at 7 a.m. this morning, but we're working at 6 a.m. so something may have happened, but traffic as bad as ever seen going into town this morning. Half an hour it was taking people to get from the back of the traffic up Lurgy Brack through the traffic lights this morning at rush time. Greg, the Remelton Road into town is just horrendous. We don't have very many options to get into town apart from Woodlands or Mountaintop, which is also becoming busy too. Indeed, and everyone's trying to find their own little route, but eventually everyone gets stuck behind the bottleneck. I'd love to know who designed the roads out past the Polestar. Such a waste of money. Even the dogs on the street knew what happened, what needed to happen out there. Extra lanes to widen what was already a bottleneck into the town. That would have solved all traffic congestion entering or leaving the town. And puts me in, reminds me of a gentleman who rang the show as the works were ongoing. And I think he got married in the late 70s and he was late for his wedding. Why? Because he got stuck on the four lanes on his way to the wedding in the 70s. Good morning, Greg. Well, that was €15 million well spent. Cycle lanes out to the Clanree that will never be used. They could have been extra lanes that would have eased traffic congestion there. But you see, there's no point having extra lanes coming into a bottleneck. It's the roundabout that's the bottleneck. So you could have 10 lanes, but there'd just be 10 lanes of shorter traffic jams with the same amount of cars in them. The bottom line is the planning authority has failed the country as they've allowed too much development in Letterkenny Town and they do not have the space now to put in enough road space to allow all to safely travel in and out. Where is the plan? Did they make provision for emergency services to travel at peak traffic times? Another, hi Greg, after 2 years construction and millions of euro, the road is no different for the motorists. The only difference is the bike lane and footpath should have left it the way it was and put the money towards a new bridge. Well, in fairness, it was about safety. There was an awful lot of instances on that road. The centre concrete structure was put up there for safety reasons as well. And the roads are, I mean, they're designed to be narrow often to slow traffic down. So in terms of why that work was done, much of it was to do with safety. That's why there's a reduced speed limit and not necessarily, it was never going to speed up traffic through the town because it all still has to go through the roundabout. The only solution for traffic in Letterkenny is to build a bridge from the Loch side of Remelton to Newton, which would cut out all the traffic coming from West Donegal. This is currently coming through Letterkenny. And we are joined on the programme now by Sheena Dunn, sleep expert and founder of Siesta Sleep. Good morning to you, Sheena. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You look like you had your 8 hours.
I do sleep well, but look, I don't always sleep well. It's one of the questions I'm most asked, actually.
Yeah.
I just want to say before I start, huge congratulations to Donegal on the Lonely Planet.
Yes, we haven't got to that yet, amazing. But yeah, it's a fantastic achievement. Thanks very much for that, Sheena. Right, so, you know, many of us struggle with our sleep. And when the clocks go forward or back, it's always the convo, you know, will we get an extra hour in bed or blah, 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 what that might mean. But for all of us, or many of us at the very least, it does throw our bodies out of sync a little bit. Doesn't take some time for quite a few of us to adjust, Sheena.
Yeah, I think that the clock change is one of those moments where you realise, oh, actually an hour does have a big impact on my sleep. I think so many people are suffering from poor sleep. There really is a huge problem in Ireland at the moment with people powering on, basically. And so this hour, I think people can say, oh, that won't really impact me, but it actually does. What's happening at the weekend is we're moving from daylight saving back to standard time. So at 2 o'clock in the morning on Sunday night, the clocks will go back to 1 o'clock in the morning. And I think the reality is most people won't even notice it because now all of our clocks update automatically. So it could pass you by, but then you'll wonder why for the next sort of week or two, either your children or yourself, you'll just struggle to wake up at the same time you normally do and feel tired at the same time that you normally do. And that's your body just recalibrating.
And before we talk about, you know, how we can help with that recalibration process, I mean, where you live, it's different. People have different experiences, obviously, with sun exposure, how dark it is, how bright it is at any given time of the year. So in Ireland, our experience might be different to someone living in Brussels, for an example.
Yeah, absolutely. So the time the sun sets has an impact on when you feel tired, because your sleep-wake cycle is one of the things that helps sort of keep track of, like, get that into rhythm, is sunlight. So the later sunsets in the summer, for example, in Ireland, what that can mean is people will stay up a little later. Now, what I love asking in my business, and I love asking just, okay, why? So why does that matter? So say you're going to bed on average about 20 minutes later if you live in the West, which we do. And that means then, okay, so you're going to bed a bit later. Why does that matter? The reality is you have to get up at a certain time, either for school or for work. So society requires you to be up at a certain time. So then it's really the compounding effect of always having a little less sleep. So it's the consistency of always having less sleep. That's what impacts. Like a night or two, you might feel a little bit snappier, or a little bit like you might reach for the wrong foods if you don't sleep well one night. But it's consistently doing that over time can have a societal impact.
Mm. Yeah, because the morning time, the trigger, the morning appointment, whatever it might be, with start of work or school or whatever, that's static. But it's the night time is the variable. And we go to bed 20 minutes later than those further east.
So obviously everyone is a little bit
of
different.
Of course, but averages.
Yeah, but if the sun is out, like, you want to be out. You want to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And we have such quite a dark winter because of these clock changes. We actually end up with darker evenings in the winter as a result. So what sleep experts sort of worldwide are currently asking for is that we have more consistency in our clocks, and we follow the seasons more instead of these two spikes in spring and in autumn. And the autumn fallback actually won't affect you physically as much at all. So a lot of people will feel even refreshed from it. The real impact is in spring, when the clocks spring forward. So there's an average of about 40 minutes less sleep people get. And just that short amount of time, it seems crazy if you haven't read the research, but that short amount of time can impact heart attacks, car crashes, people's mental health. So that's what we're trying to do in the sleep world, is to encourage no more changes, but to stick at standard time, which is what we're moving into this weekend.
The problem is we're coupled with Britain and Northern Ireland, really, and the resistance will come from the fact that we could have a situation where it's 8 o'clock in Lifford and 9 o'clock in Strabane. You say we perhaps maybe should not necessarily talk about commerce and convenience and look at health and the health implications.
Yeah, well, the sleep professionals in the UK feel the same. So it's they would be trying to keep to standard time as well. So Ireland obviously will have discussions around alignment with our with our big.
I've never
partner.
Heard anyone in life speaking passionately about its retention. Do you know, you hear, oh, it's for farmers or it's for schools. I've never really heard anyone speak with any, you know, conviction to say we really need to retain this practice of ours. I noticed in your article, one of the things you said were quite interesting. There's a big challenge at the moment of people waking up at 5 a.m. Now, is that in just reference to a wake up in the middle of the night and then going back to sleep?
So my business is CS Sleep, and we're conducting a national survey. And thanks for referencing the article in The Independent with Barbara. Thank you. So we're doing a national survey at the moment, which is on our website. And we have, I think, about 400 or 500 responses so far. But also I've been running a sleep business for the last 3 years. So my knowledge of people's sleep in Ireland would be high. And waking up at 5 a.m. is a type of insomnia. And what is happening is people are waking up and then they're finding new habits to really encourage them to stay awake at that time. So your body can create a new habit so quickly.
The temptation to grab the phone is so strong.
Yeah, especially with sleep. So I think the challenge for this weekend for those people is if you're naturally waking up at 5 a.m., it's going to be four for a little while until your body resets. So they call it social jet lag. It's like the difference between when you wake up and when you need to wake up for society.
I find myself going through, I go through periods, that's why I jumped out of me. I go through maybe a week or two where I wake up at five, almost on the button. And then it ceases then. What is there a trigger for that in people, this type of insomnia?
So there's, you have sleep cycles going through the night. So you have four or five sleep cycles. And I think anyone with small children really knows this.
Yeah, I look at the monitor and it's amazing. You do see, like I have Hudson's sleep cycles up until such time as I'm asleep, down to a T. I know exactly, I don't know the words for it and all, but you could almost know when he's about to start tossing and turning after appearing to not move at all for a couple of hours.
Yes. Well, the same happens with adults. We just sort of forget about that when we're adults and don't give ourselves a little bit of leeway or a bit more understanding on it. So what's happening is your sleep is the chances are you can be woken up more at that time. But then it's what you do at that time is important. So if you use that time to get up and exercise, your body is naturally then going to go, OK, wake up time. This is the time for me to get up. And you can create then that habit afterwards. What isn't great is when people don't want to be awake at that time and they need to try and reset their circadian rhythm, it's called. So they need to try and figure out how they can get the sleep they need just in a time that works for them. Because a lot of people find they worry a lot more if they're awake at 5 a.m. because there's no other humans around.
Whether I got my ability to go back to sleep at that time is based purely on my level of contentment. If I feel content and my mind is relaxed, I will probably nod straight off. Or I know if I'm not, if my mind's racing, that's it. What's your views then on napping?
So my business is called Siest Sleep. So a lot of people will know the word siesta, which means nap. So I'm a huge fan of naps. And
me
the reason
too.
Is...
That's what I want to hear. Sleeping in our house is like a sin.
Pardon?
Sleeping in our house is like a sin, and it was like that too. And it was like, oh, did you have a sleep? No. You know what I mean? I wasn't asleep. I was resting my eyes. But anyway, sorry, I digress. Sheena, go ahead.
There's more and more research coming through on naps. And I've been fortunate to study insomnia and circadian rhythms at the University of Oxford over the last few years. And the research on naps is growing. But one thing I always think about when I think of research is usually the research is coming from animal studies. Now, the reality is you can't say to a mouse, I need you to nap, right? I need you to nap now. You can't do it. So as a result of that, there isn't a huge amount of research about napping. And I know that I just like to follow through maybe why isn't there the research? And that would be one of the reasons. But then I think the reality. So napping, people's lives are really complicated and messy and stressful at the moment. And one of the most powerful things about a nap is, first of all, it helps you shut down your whole body. So you're not looking at your phone. Your mind isn't whizzing and whirring. And you're taking that moment out, even 5 minutes. So they call it a nano nap. 5 minutes lying there, lie on your bed, lie on the couch and just close your eyes. And I think it can be really refreshing for you because you're just allowing yourself to recalibrate. I think the important thing is to not let it move into then a full on sleep, only because you won't feel tired enough in the evening again.
Yeah. Yeah. And then as you say, routines, it just becomes established sleep pattern and broken into two effectively. So yes, Sheena, just finally then, for people who will feel a bit discombobulated then after the clocks fall back, I'm just waiting for the sure memes now on Facebook. But anyway, any advice to sort of try and limit as much as possible the disturbance to ourselves?
Yeah, well, I would emphasize again that this change can often be quite a refreshing time for people, so they can feel more energized. So it's a good thing. With small children, we love Babob's Sleep. They're a great consultancy in Ireland and they give really specific timing changes. So it's just to move your clock really from today 15 minutes forward. So move your children's naps, their meal times, their bedtimes, their wake up times, 15 minutes, because it's Wednesday now. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. the hour then when it goes back, you've already taken into account of it. So when I set up the business and we invented these sort of weighted sleep products, it's because we know that most people, when they're tired, can't follow routine and they can't change habits. Mm-hmm. And so we know the reality is most people will wake up on Sunday and go, ah, why are they waking up at 5 a.m? Yes. Ah, the clock's changed. So just know that.
And what is that you're holding, Sheena? What is that sleep product?
This is a weighted sleep product. It's one of the first sleep products that doesn't look medical. Mm. So it looks like a beautiful cushion, but it's weighted, it's research-backed, it's patented. And we actually do a lot of customers in Donegal, so hi. We have been selling these for the last 3 years on siestsleep.com. They're guaranteed Irish, but most sleep products look, or, you know, to help your knees, like at pre and post knee surgery, mm-hmm. they look like medical products. And I wanted something that makes people feel really good, because mm-hmm. if you like something, you'll use it more and mm-hmm. it'll help you more as well.
Even from an early age, you can see the benefit in babies and young children. A little bit of weight on them helps them sleep a little bit better. There are products. I'm not suggesting you put anything on babies, but you know what I mean.
Age five plus.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Listen, fascinating stuff. Thank you very much indeed. I really appreciate it. Oh, by the way, there is an article from Sheena. It's in The Independent. You can get it online. Is it in today's paper or yesterday's paper? Or which paper?
Monday's paper,
okay. So if you still have a copy of that, read through that, and it's available online as well, of course. And your website for Siest Sleep, Sheena?
It's Siest, S-I-E-S-T, sleep.com. And we're selling all across Europe, and there's a lot of great reviews on there. You can have a read yourself. And if anyone has any sleep questions, obviously me and my team can help.
All right. Thanks very much indeed. Take care of yourself. Sheena Dunn there. Sleep tight. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts. Now, I flagged on the show yesterday that we were working on another story that is in the realms of health, and it's off the back of the retirement of the dermatologist from Letterkenny University Hospital. No replacement, and the alternative being people going to Sligo for that treatment. But the dermatologist there, the consultant dermatologist there, already has a huge workload. So this is going to affect quite a few of you out there who are engaging with dermatological services at Letterkenny University Hospital. As I say, we didn't want to go with it until such time as we had some further information. Now, what we have learned is that all GPs in Donegal now have been issued a letter from the dermatologist in Sligo. He's advising them of the following. I wish to appraise you of the state of the dermatology service in the Northwest. You'll be aware that Dr. Podmore, dermatologist, is retiring. The hospital, and in fact, I believe Dr. Podmore actually extended her service to facilitate as much as is possible before finally retiring. The hospital manager in Letterkenny, shall I read this verbatim? Yeah, because it's... Okay, well, I have to. This is what a consultant dermatologist has sent out to a lot of people. The hospital manager in Letterkenny did not think it worthwhile to let me know of the retirement. I found out indirectly. Despite writing to him, as yet, I've had no contact, despite new patient referrals being redirected to me. Everyone knew this was coming, but what, if any, planning have management done in preparation for it? Delivering a dermatology service to the Northwest in Sealtas is Sealtas' responsibility, not mine. Delayed diagnosis impacting melanoma survival, acne teenagers, scarred, eczema, psoriasis patients, lives destroyed because of an inability to gain access to care, rests on management's shoulders. Donegal patients already make treatment decisions based on distance to travel. So dermatology, as you heard from the consultant himself, diagnosis impacting melanoma survival, which is life. That's a potentially life-threatening condition. Acne, teenagers scarred, and so on. For years, dermatology in the Northwest has been ignored, neglected, and quite frankly dismantled by management both locally and by Sealtas centrally, whereas there has been significant expansion in other regions. From the non-appointment by management of an excellence dermatologist in 2014, despite funding being in place, to Galway University Hospital being allowed to withdraw dermatology services from Roscommon and Ballina with no consideration of the adverse impact on my service in the Northwest. I have less nursing hours now than when I started 20 years ago. I've lost half my secretarial office space. I can't get adequate secretarial support, and I had no secretary in Sligo for an entire month last October. I can't even get an examination light installed to properly examine patients after 2 years trying. All this in the context of being single-handed with thousands of patients. This is the dermatologist in Sligo. Thousands of patients awaiting their first appointment. A wait time of over 4 years. 4,000 patients. Only urgent cases are coming off that list. This has made recruitment into the region very difficult. Today, I have triaged over 100 new GP dermatological referrals onto the Letterkenny waiting list alone. To date, there has been no instruction from Sealtha management what to do with Dr. Podmore's return patients, new patients, patients that require skin cancer follow-up, monitoring of drug treatments and repeat prescriptions, many of which can only be written by a consultant. It is simply not possible for me to absorb Dr. Podmore's patients. What's happening to dermatology in Letterkenny University Hospital today will soon be dermatology in Sligo University Hospital tomorrow. Ultimately, Galway University Hospital will have to care for all dermatology in the Northwest in the not too distant future unless something happens. This is the reality that now needs planning. At present, there is no assistance coming from GUH despite their significant consultant and NCHD expansion. Again, this is a failure of management, he says. I hope those consultants who've signed the new contract in GUH realise that they may be asked to work outside of the usual locations, i.e. work in Sligo. So we got handed numerous versions of this. So this, by the way, those were the comments from a consultant dermatologist in the Northwest. Simply can't take on the workload that may now come their way because of the dermatologist in Letterkenny University Hospital retiring. A number of questions. How long was this retirement known of? Quite some time. What efforts were done to replace Dr. Podmore? What's going to happen now to return patients? What impact might this have on cancer diagnosis? What impact might this have on people with skin conditions that's going to be of severe consequence in terms of their physical and mental health? Again, unfortunately, to be bringing you another negative news story in terms of health. But as I say, it's something we've been working on, and it's something we'll continue to work on. But I think by any measure, another very strongly worded letter there from a consultant working in the Northwest. Cathy Donaghy is one of the authors in The Lonely Planet Guide and joins us now. Hi, Cathy. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Great to have you on board. Right. Donegal has ranked the only destination in Ireland as the fourth best region in the world to visit. What an amazing thing for us here.
Yeah, it's kind of incredible, Greg. I mean, I think that there has been, I suppose, a lot of interest in Donegal has been building. I know Donegal Tourism have been doing a lot of work on this too. I have been sort of quietly working on this for a while and was sworn to secrecy because Lonely Planet wanted to sort of, I suppose they want to have a lot of momentum behind this and keep it a secret so that they, when they do launch it to the world, there is a sort of a wow factor about it. And I guess there's no doubt about it. When Lonely Planet includes a destination in their guide and their guide for 2024, the first actual published guide since sort of normal travel resumed again, Greg. So I guess you have to see that there is a wow factor about that because this is aimed at a global audience, not just a national audience. This book is also, it's sort of going to be like a keepsake book, you know what I mean? So I think it's always on the bestseller list to have Donegal in there, and it looks so beautiful. I mean, obviously I've written the words and talked about this place that is in my heart 100%, but there are some glorious images in there. And
so yeah, Cathy, just to understand the process, is it external individuals then that would make this determination, and then they'd contact someone like yourself and say, we have decided through our investigations that we want to rank Donegal where it is. you know, can you put it into words what it has to offer? Is that what you, is that, that your role in this? And if it is, what a responsible task for you, Kathy.
Yeah, I'll take you back a bit there, Greg. This begins where, Lonely Planet sends out, to their, travel writers and publishers and partners all over the world, and they ask them for recommendations across the planet, literally, for, the best experiences, the best place. What do they think is going to be trending and really hot for 2024? Then those results are sort of pulled into Lonely Planet's Best in Travel team, and they whittle that down, and that list gets whittled down. And this year what they did was they wanted to ask a local, essentially, to write this. Okay, so they wanted to get feet on the ground, someone who lives and breathes and knows these places that they're talking about. So that's where I came in. And I did find this a really daunting task. Like, I write for a living and, talk about Donegal, whittle that down to like less than 1,000 words. I thought, where do I begin? Like, the county is vast. There's so many beautiful places that I would love to mention, but, you've got to try. And for a global audience, you're trying to think of, the top things, but also encapsulate the heart and soul of the place. So, yes, it was very daunting. And I walked away from the computer more than once saying, I can't do this. This is too big, because I feel this so strongly. I want to do a really good job on this. This is so close to literally my heart, you know.
Our recognition as the coolest place on the planet in 2017, I always struggle to sort of articulate that and what that meant. And I don't know, maybe it resonated better around the world. I think it's far, maybe it's not, I don't know. But it feels more for more important or marketable that we are the only destination in Ireland and the fourth best region in the world to visit. Do you know what I mean? So I think it sort of blows the audience out a little bit wider compared to the coolest moniker.
That's a good point, Greg, because I think the coolest place on the planet, I don't know if Donegal people really think of themselves as cool. We sort of go, this is just what
but
we do.
But cool is open to interpretation.
Maybe that's what, to outsiders, yeah. I think they probably think, yeah, they're really cool, because we're quite laid back. And I know that I was on a film set recently and there were quite big stars on it. And what they said, one thing they said about Donegal is we kind of get left alone. You know, we're treated like the locals, but like, if you want to sit and have your pint at the bar, you are left alone. I think maybe that's cool. You know, that's the cool thing. But yes, this is a very specific drilling down by like a travel expert, globally, like Lonely Planet, into regions around the world. And like Donegal is in there with Tuscany and Montana, two places I've visited. And like, to be included with regions like this in the world, which are, glorious, like big sky country and beautiful destinations like this, I do think it drills down into, a real global audience with a reach there. That saying we're cool is wonderful, but this is why. And this is, they're talking about our purely wild with a big heart and things like that. You know, it doesn't get much better, Greg.
Yeah. And now too, obviously, is to build on this and marketing for the next year really kicks in and comes into play, and to capitalize as much as we can on this, Kathy.
I think that's true. I think that's true, Greg. And, there are lots of brilliant people on the ground, working away. And maybe they feel like they've been working away and we don't get the visitor numbers that, other counties might. So I think this is time for them to really not sit back on their laurels and rest, but hopefully you build it and they'll come. And you've seen people with tourism offerings all over this county, like, I'm thinking of Inish Adventures in the Mavilla, like Hugh Hunter Eco Atlantic Adventures over near Lough Swilly, and people like that doing great things, like off the beaten track cycling in Glenveagh. There's just amazing people doing amazing things. So this is lifting the lid, and hopefully when people come to Donegal, they'll see it. But, obviously, and Lonely Planet, what their, their travel experts, why they chose Donegal, what the USP was of Donegal is, our outdoors. It's a wow in itself. It does
purely
all the talking
wild
for itself.
Yeah, purely wild with a big heart. Exactly.
Yeah, wild with a big heart. And I think, that's what people get when they come here. You know that you could be the only person on a big expansive beach. I take myself off to Colgaff Beach or Kinnego Bay on a Monday morning and I might be the only person there walking. Where in the world are you going to find that,
Yeah, it's remarkable too. And people are wild, like how is this place not got 4,000 people sitting on it or something? You do see those posts on social media from people visiting the area, because you get this sense that you've discovered it as well, which I think sells the experience.
Yeah.
And also too, I think really what we need to do with this as well, Kathy, is yes, of course, maximize our existing markets, but because of the sort of global brand that is that we're featured in here, is actually, you know, forge new markets as much as we can as well.
And I think, you know, that there's a lot of efforts to do that. We can see, you know, Donegal Tourism, Donegal County Council and Sean Tourism really, really making big efforts, I think, to do that and being very imaginative in the way that they're doing that. You know, I think one thing Lonely Planet was big on was, you know, tourism and kind of in terms of sustainability and tourism. And they also looked at, you know, you made the point there that we're not over-touristed. And I think that was a very attractive thing, you know, that they found that, you know, some regions, you know, might be a bit jaded, but Donegal is certainly not. You know, you do have that sense of why come, you know, because you are, travellers want to feel like they're discovering something new.
I think that's down to us that people can come here and meander around the place and be left alone. You know, if you go to the strip in Albufeira, you know, it's going to be music coming out of every bar, people offering you free shots to come in, cheap drink, blah, blah, blah. But what our offering is, you know, go and explore. If you want us to engage you, we will. We'll give you great food. We'll give you great drink. We'll sit beside you in a bar and have great conversation. But if you want to be left alone, you're left alone too, and you can explore. You know what I mean? We let people genuinely sort of, I think, explore. And it's a sort of soft, tough touch tourism for the most part. And I presume that's what makes it so attractive.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Greg. And, you know, I take this back sometimes, like, you know, my own experiences of living here, you know, you'll go to the beach and you might be out and you might be walking and, you know, you'll always get the hand raised to wave at you. And if you approach someone to talk, everyone's willing to chat, but you are left on your own. People are. And I think when people come here, they can totally engage with local people. They can dip in and out as much as they want. And they can, you know, go for the tourism products. They can go for the busy bar, but they can also go for the sunrise hike up Errigal or somewhere where, you know, and Lonely Planet, I think, named that as one of their best hikes in the world. And I got the chance only a few weeks ago, I joined the Donegal Camino and I did that sunrise hike at the top of Errigal, and we got the most perfect day with the most perfect guides. And as the sun rose and Dunluce Lake spread out before me, I honestly, you feel like you're in heaven.
It's breathtaking.
Like, it is incredible. It was absolutely
breathtaking. And you know, it's some of the casual accidental marketing that goes on too. I mean, obviously during the summer, you know, Gabriel Byrne, Liam Neeson was about, but even it kind of probably slipped under the radar a little bit. Last month, there's a guy in UFC, Johnny Walker, is huge on social media. He's a great character. But he just was casually up and downings, and he was on his TikTok and his Instagram, and it looked beautiful, and he spanned around. And, you know, as I say, the scenery looked absolutely wonderful. But that reach that he's getting, like, you know, I mean, we pay influencers to try and attract people here, but I think some of that organic, natural stuff is what really, really works. And like literally hundreds of thousands of eyes were on that. And who's to say what impact that might have? It's lots of little different things that seem to be building us towards this. And the reason I mention that randomly is because he's huge amongst teenagers, young men, you know, a different demographic that often, if you look at what we try and target, it's not often those categories, maybe because they're not big spenders, I don't know. But anyway, my wider point being is that sort of natural sort of advertisement, I think, is invaluable. And it sort of works with the Love Donegal and everything else that's going on, Kathy.
Yeah, I think you're right, Greg. And sometimes these things can be a kind of a slow burn, like a build. So what you find happening is like people are working away behind the scenes in the tourism business and influencers and you know, people like me who get to write at a national level about Donegal and my experiences of living here. You know, all of these things combine, I suppose. And then you get a moment, and then that moment sort of reaches its crescendo when you have, a day like today when Lonely Planet comes out and reveals its best in travel for 2024, and Donegal is in that list, which is just, you couldn't buy that kind of. And it's totally, you know, it's not like no one's paying for this. No one is. It's not, you know, this is, you know, a guide of experts naming Donegal.
To measure their own success, they need measures, which is often paying influencers. But some of our greatest advocates for this county are the likes of yourself, you know, with your social media posts and the writing work that you do. Mutual friend Noel Cunningham, of course, even Daniel O'Donnell,
ambassador.
You know, Daniel O'Donnell and some, you know, the Brennans, right across the spectrum that do it for the love of it. They do it because they love this county. And it's that, and I think that has built something here, as well as having Star Wars here and all the other little different factors that are coming. And I've noticed myself, you know, lots of different faces. Donegal Town, still loads of tourists there and loads of different accents, you know, and the season is extending. And hopefully the Lonely Planet and the words that you're responsible for within it will further boost that our profile on the world stage. No doubt, Cathy.
Thank you, Greg. Yeah, it's been a great joy for me. I mean, Donegal is in my heart, but also, you know, to write for Lonely Planet, you know, I was one of these travel geeks, you know, as a younger person before my children came along and my wanderlust got definitely stopped a bit.
Before they ruined it all, like they do for us all.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think I've got mine. Yes, I've nearly got mine to adulthood. What do I do? I've another toddler. So that's me written off for another 20 years. But anyway, I'm just venting, Cathy. Hey, you'll be babysitting grandchildren soon. Don't worry about it. Don't get any notions.
I think you're right. But, you know, just to say, Greg, you know, like for me, I grew up and I, you know, when I traveled a lot as a younger woman, you know, the first thing I did, you know, when I was planning a trip with Richard, my husband, you know, I went out, bought the Lonely Planet guide in the days sort of pre-internet. And we literally, you know, that went in the hiking bag. And it came all over the world. And as I talk to you, there is a spine of Lonely Planet guides on my bookshelf. Wow. And, you know, for me to be, as a writer, to contribute to an iconic guide like this is really...
It's like a full circle moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it actually is. And to write about Donegal. So, you know what? This is a pinch me moment for me as well.
Yeah, this box has been ticked left, right and centre. Cathy, 100%. Listen, thanks so much for your time. I really do appreciate it. A caller says, please, please, please stop advertising our beautiful county. We'll be overcrowded and overwhelmed. Crowded beaches, busy roads, no parking, just stop. We've plenty of space to accommodate everyone, I think.
100%.
All right. Take care, Cathy. Thanks for your time.
Thanks,
as always,
Greg.
Chat to you soon. Cathy Donaghy, one of the authors there in the Lonely Planet Guide, Donegal externally selected as the fourth best region, which is a huge honour. Back with more shortly. The weather actually coming up. Paul Gillespie is a spokesperson for the Donegal branch of diabetes. Good morning to you, Paul. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
Right. Now, you've been putting this conversation off for quite some time, but presumably today's the day that you feel it needs to be had. What's the situation?
Yeah, well, as you know, back early at the beginning of this year, we raised a concern about endocrinologists. A second endocrinologist arrived to Letterkenny for adult care. He only stayed less than a month and left, but then there's now no endocrinologist in Letterkenny for close to 6 months, and I've been very patient over the last month because we were promised a meeting by Sean Murphy back since April, and he kept kicking the can down the road. But now, for the last month, we can get no information whatsoever from the hospital. I've just been on to the office this morning again. Keep saying Sean Murphy's going to ring us back, Sean Murphy's going to email us back. We're getting no interaction at all, and yet we have no endocrinologists, either adult or in paediatrics, in Letterkenny Hospital now whatsoever. So the crisis in Letterkenny seems to be down to, there's something seriously wrong with management, that they cannot attract staff, and then when they get staff, they cannot keep staff. But this also has to go right up the line to Steeltia. Like, why is Steeltia and the HSE allowing this to happen? Letterkenny has been run into the ground.
What's the consequences for the public in not having access to an endocrinologist, to beg your pardon?
Yeah, well, type 1 diabetes is a critical illness. Like, it's a life-threatening disease, so you need to have a proactive care to make sure that your diabetes is kept under control, that you get to see an endocrinologist. Like, the government guideline is that it should be seen a maximum of 6 months apart. at the minute in Letterkenny, it was 2 years of a gap before the endocrinologist left. So, and even like now, like one of the comments from the Sean Murphy's office is that they have a registrar with an interest in diabetes now trying to run some of the clinics. But where's the governance? The governance has to be from an endocrinologist, but Letterkenny don't have an endocrinologist. So then, like as you say, there's no pump therapy available in Letterkenny. Pump therapy is seen as the gold standard for type 1 diabetes care, and it's just not happening. It is not available in the Northwest.
Obviously, people need to be seen on a regular basis to see how they're faring with their medication, see if any adjustments need to be made, and so on and so forth. Obviously, any delays in that can affect other organs of the body, eyesight, and what have you. Like the consequences of not getting timely reevaluations, if that's the right way of putting it, Paul, have serious consequences. Are people, if they can afford to go in private?
Very, very serious. And like one of the main issues is as well is your blood circulation and to your feet. An awful lot of issues with feet problems, critical with eyes as well, and then it can go on to liver. So like it's serious long-term consequences. Like diabetes is one of the things that with good proactive care, then, you know, people's health can be maintained and they can stay out of hospital.
Well, Paul, I asked Tony Canavan about the endocrinologist, not Paul, but Tony Canavan. I asked him about the endocrinologist. I can't remember. I asked so many questions over 38 minutes. I can't remember all of the answers. But listen, we're going to dig a bit deeper on this as well. And those, unfortunately, who need to see a dermatologist are in the same boat. No endocrinologist. Endocrinologist, no dermatologist. I don't know what to say, Paul. It's okay.
I know, like they really are. Like, you know, the management. I think we definitely need a huge change in management.
Well, maybe they're trying to. It seems most people, consultants, seem to think that it's not local management that they're banging the head against a brick wall. But anyway, listen, Paul. Thank you for that. That's Paul.